The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 30th day of January, 2013. The Dow's flat. The S&P's flat. Comp is up 3. Gold's up $17. Crude is down 2 pennies a barrel. And we're awaiting the Fed. BlackBerry, or REM, no wait, BlackBerry, wait. Oh, they used to be called REM, but now they're going to be called BlackBerry. They're going to change their symbol, change the name of their company. They really are pinning all of their hopes on the new BlackBerry 10. There's actually two of them, one that looks like the old retro-style BlackBerry with the plastic keys, and one that looks more like a modern smartphone with no physical keyboard. They were unveiled today. All the features. The BlackBerry addicts really liked it, but the stock market, not so much. Earlier, stock was down about 4% on the day. You know, like I said yesterday, the stock has risen. It's doubled over the last few months as we came into this event. So if the worst that happens on a buy the rumor, sell the fact kind of thing is that the stock loses 4%, they'll probably be happy with that at the end of the day. On the screen in front of you, the S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is an hourly chart. If you're joining us for the first time and you're only hearing my voice and not seeing the screens, the way to fix that, just go to the homepage at cfrn.net. On the right-hand side of the page is a red, white, and blue button. If you click that, It'll take you to a page that gives you the instructions that gets you in here to see the charts live in real time, and it allows you to participate in the discussion. Okay, we'll be talking later in the show with Mike Reed from TradeStalker, David Williams from PageTrader.com. Michael will be coming on in a moment to do the recap from our live trading room this morning. So if you want to be able to see those charts live in real time and ask questions, then pop on over to the homepage of CFRN.net. On the right-hand side of the page, click that button that says, click here. It's red, white, and blue. It'll take you to a page that gives you all the instructions. Okay, we've had a very tight range this week, and I don't suspect to see anything much as we head into the Fed announcement this afternoon. Everyone will be listening for that language. Is the Fed going to tighten? Will there be talk of raising interest rates? Has the economy recovered enough, or is it still too fragile? Well, we'll know in just a few hours, 2:15 Eastern. We had one tweet. We had a couple tweets last night. The one on the S&P right here, 1501. Price was up in this area when we put the tweet out, and this one was to buy on a limit. Normally, when we do a tweet, it will be to buy or sell on a stop, because we're putting it out there hours ahead of when we think it's going to actually trigger. And it's a little easier to gauge those on a stop than with a limit. But last night we went with a limit, 1501. Now, that handed up, made four and a half, the market made 4.5 points available off of that entry at 1501. Okay, when it pulled into 1501, there was a drawdown. But as you can see, we closed up inside of the weekly trading zone on that hour. Then we made a run. It was good for 4.5 points. We then pulled back to test 1501. Now, if you were watching this candle as it built, it looked like we were about to topple off the edge of the earth. This was a big, angry red candle until just moments before the hour closed, and it raced right back up to the weekly trading zone, closing just a couple ticks below it. We struggled for an hour inside of a 1 point range. Yeah, we popped out of the top, but now we got another hour on our hands, and we're starting to move a little bit to the upside. Okay? A slow move higher into the Fed would be what I would speculate if I were going to speculate what we'll see. That would be it, if anything. Maybe quietly sideways, or maybe a drift high. Now, if you turn on any of the financial channels, they're talking about how many points to the all-time high, to the peak, I think they're calling it. They're counting it down because the S&P cash made it over 1508. That opens the door. 58.38 S&P points to the peak. 212 or 213 Dow points to the 07 peak. You know, be careful with all that. That can be dangerous, but it is what it is, and they got to have something to talk about. There's just a ton of news today, but I'm not going to go over all the headlines now. Maybe we'll talk about some of it later. Mike Reed, I think, is going to come on today. He hasn't emailed me yet, but he was supposed to come on yesterday, but we had Rob Howe on to talk about real estate, and Mike Reed was going to come on and talk about the premium, fair value. For those of you who have questions on that, he said he would try to come on today, but I haven't gotten an email from him yet, but I want to leave ample time for him to discuss that. Just a couple of headlines really quick, and then we'll go to Michael in the recap. The American Silver Eagle hit an all-time high for sales in January. The U.S. Mint has resumed sales after huge demand triggered a brief suspension, and gold coins also posted their best performance since July of 2010. As of January 29th, Silver Eagle sales for the month were 7.1 million ounces. Now, this is data is from the U.S. Mint's website, surpassing the previous record of 6.1 million ounces set in January of 2012. Not only do we have clients calling in, but they're buying in huge quantities, according to David Beam, who's the vice president of Blanchard & Company. They're buying the entire 500-ounce boxes that are sealed by the U.S. Mint. That's what people want right now. Beam was referring to the standard sealed Silver Eagle Monster box, that's what they call it, containing 500 one-ounce coins. The Mint sells only to its handful of authorized wholesalers. Earlier this week, the Mint resumed supplying Silver Eagles after it halted sales on January 17th as soaring demand depleted its stock. However, silver coin sales to dealers are still through the allocation process or rationing, according to the U.S. Mint. With two more days remaining in January, gold coin sales were 140,000 ounces compared with 127,000 ounces for all of January 2012. Sales appear set for the highest monthly tally since July of 2010. Some coin dealers warn of a post-January drop in sales similar to last year's pattern as early interest tends to wane once the first mintage is over. Well, we've seen prices on the decline in the futures market, on the spot price, but suddenly big interest in the bullion. Now, it's not a good day to be the Zimbabwean finance minister. After paying public workers' salaries last week, the balance in cash-strapped Zimbabwe government public account stood at just $217, according to their finance minister, Tenda Biti. Last week, after we paid the civil servants, there was $217 left in the government coffers. The government finances are in paralysis state at the present moment. We are failing to meet our targets. Zimbabwe's economy went into a free fall at the turn of the millennium after President Robert Mugabe began seizing white-owned farms. The move demolished investor confidence in the country, paralyzed production, prompted international sanctions, and scared off tourists. After more than a decade in which the country suffered hyperinflation of 231 million percent, I'll say that again, hyperinflation of 231 million percent, and infrastructure that crumbled as prices went up, the situation is now a little more stable, but public finances remain a mess and local businesses battle against unstable electricity, lack of liquidity, and high labor cost. And this is a mineral-rich country. They are now using the U.S. dollar and the South African rand because the Zimbabwean currency, it just has no value. In other headlines, Amazon missed on their earnings, but the stock soared to an all-time high. Now, as you recall, Apple just delivered record earnings and their stock sold off. Amazon, I told you when Steve Jobs left planet Earth that Jeff Bezos might be the smartest man in America. Okay? Now, I don't know how this happened, but Amazon missed. They missed. Stock soared to an all-time high. Go figure. I could give you the whole article, but we just don't have time. Herbalife, striking back. As you know, hedge fund manager Bill Ackman, the CEO of Pershing Square, has attacked Herbalife, the multi-level marketing firm that sells nutrition products. The company appears to be stepping up its defense and preparing a counterattack. Herbalife has registered a bunch of Bill Ackman domain names. This is going to get dirty. And they look as though they might be used as a direct assault on the hedge fund manager. The New York Post reports that Herbalife now owns TheRealBillAckman.com, BillAckman.net, and TheRealAckman.net since January 18th. The sites are not active yet, but Herbalife is the owner. Last month, Ackman gave a 342-slide presentation at a Sun conference in Manhattan calling Herbalife a pyramid scheme. His fund is shorting more than 20 million shares and has a price target of zero. And it doesn't end there. Following the presentation, he launched his website, factsaboutherbalife.com, a website that features documents, promotional material from the company, videos, and depositions. Ackman also purchased Google Ads so that when you search for terms related to Herbalife, you end up going to, guess where, Facts About Herbalife. Herbalife responded immediately to Ackman's presentation, saying he used outdated, inaccurate, and distorted information. The company also hosted an analyst day in January to rebut Ackman's claims. Since December 18th, the trading session before Ackman confirmed his short, shares of Herbalife are down about 6%. And Dan Loeb has gone on the attack also, and he is very much long Herbalife. I think his mom must be a distributor. Yesterday, President Barack Obama said, now is the time for comprehensive immigration reform. Now, he held that little speech in Las Vegas, so we'll wait until our guests from Vegas come on later in the show, David Williams from Page Trader and Miss Robin Dane, the trading coach. But for now, we'll go to Mr. Michael B. and get into today's recap from the live trading room. Michael, yes. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
So another great day, eh?
Yes, we ended it all with a nice trade on the Russell, and so it's
me, Robin,
it's all good.
Come on and go. It's a great day in the live trading room.
Yeah, it's a great day in the live trading room.
Well, here, let me give you the microphone, the speakers, and you can run it through.
All right, I will do that. There we go.
Got it?
Yep, just about. Hang on. There we go. All right. Now I have it, and everyone should be looking at my charts. Excellent. Hang on. Let me update my spreadsheet here so we can see where we stand on the thing. And I do remember 30 Jan. And Q at 4. Crude oil, what do we have? Minus 8 on that. Gold, we had plus 8 on that. And we had Russell R2K. 9 on that. And that is worth $90. $37.8750.
You talking to
us? What's that? No, I was just—I was updating my spreadsheet, so I would have a valid number, and I can when I do the recording, because I haven't started the recording yet.
Oh.
But when I start the recording,
do you want me to
tap
dance or something? Or?
Yeah, just a little tap dance. All right, are you ready? Here we go.
Yeah. Are you?
All right, just about. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Wednesday, January 30th, 2013. Let's go through the results of the live trading room this morning. On gold, we were plus 8 ticks. On the NQ, we were plus 4 ticks. On the Russell, we were plus 9 ticks. And on crude oil, we were minus 8 ticks. So we're minus 8 ticks on crude, plus 8 on gold, plus 4 on the NQ, and plus 9 on the Russell. That brings our net profit for the month of January so far up to $3,787.50. So that means tomorrow I'm going to have to make $215 to be over $4,000 for the month of January. All right, well, that's okay. Hopefully I'll be able to do that. Today it took us 20 minutes to reach our two-point mark. Okay, it took us 20 minutes and three trades to reach our two-point mark this morning. I am also keeping track of that. But we don't really have any lengthy statistics on that yet because we just started keeping track of it. But I mean, I would venture to say that we could go back into December, and pretty much every day from here back into December, we've hit 2 points at some point. Our last down day in the live trading room, knock on wood, excluding commissions, was December 10th. And let's just get into the trades, okay? I'll start off with this one right here because this is the Russell, and this was our last trade of the morning. We didn't trade in here. When it started off, it was really super choppy in here, okay? And we didn't take any trades in there at all, okay? Not a single trade. and then had a big move down. We did have some partners that took some nice trades in here on this move down. However, we stayed away from it. We missed all these right here. This one, and this one. We missed them all. But on the start of the move down, I just stayed away from that whole thing. And then it went sideways a little bit, and toward the end of the morning session, right in here, it gave an up close right here above the trend line. Now, I'll bring this picture up, and we can go through the rules again. I do this every day. I use the same picture every day because it never changes. I use the same picture. Actually, this is a crude GCL G3. I use the same picture across all the markets, too, because it doesn't change. It's the same thing over and over and over again. All right. But here we got our bullish cross. That's step one. We got our pullback. I mean, our pull away from the BBC. That's step two. Step three, right in here, we didn't actually get. Okay. We didn't actually get step three here because it didn't hit the BBC. We did have bullish divergence. So in this case, you could take the up close above the trend line. Okay. And that's where the entry was over here. I didn't take that trade at the time. It did move up five or six ticks, and then it moved back down. If you did take that trade, the entry was at 900.5, I believe, 900.4, 900.5, right in there. I didn't take the trade, and if you did take it, you stayed in it. I finally took the trade. Actually, no, I didn't take that trade, and it happened again over here. The close above the trend line where the entry was 900.4. I didn't take that trade either. I finally took it over here. I didn't take this one because I was doing something else at the moment. And when I saw it close back up above the, or I saw it getting back up above the MA1 over here anyway, I jumped into it right at the end of the morning session, and I took 9 ticks profit. I know some of the other partners jumped into it with me. It went right up to the weekly trading zone. All right. But I took 9 ticks profit on that trade right there. You can see right here it had some bearish divergence, but the price and the black line were above the BBC, so there was no trading in there. It's now crossed down below. So far, if we were to look at this, we have the bearish cross, which is step one, the pull away, which is step two. We don't have the divergence yet, so we don't have step four, and it hasn't pulled back up to test the BBC, so we don't have step three. Okay. So let's just be done with the Russell for now. Crude oil. Let's put crude over here, and we can take a look at the crude. Now, we took a break-even trade there and a losing trade here on crude. Those were our trades in the morning on the crude oil. Crude started out, well, crude inventories came out today. We took a break-even trade there, too. Crude inventories came out today, and so the crude was really choppy during that period, a little bit before it and right at it. There were some opportunities in here. We took a short trade right here, and we moved our stop quickly because the green line was so close to the cycle. So once it put four or five ticks profit in the trade, we moved our stop to break even. Now, at this point right here, this was at 946. If I had taken 2 ticks profit on this trade, that would have put us over the 2-point mark on the morning. So 16 minutes into the morning, we could have been at our plus 2-point mark. But I wanted to execute the trade normally. I didn't want to try to do that just to make the 2 points. So we let it go, and it came back and it stopped us out of break-even. There was a trade in here that we didn't take. We missed more trades in here. As you know, the bearish cross, the pull away, the pull back up test of the BBC with the down close with the bearish divergence. The entry would have been right in here on the crude. Now, that's right before the crude inventories come out. So all these bars right in here are all the crude inventory reaction. Okay. We waited for that to settle down for about 5 minutes or so. There was an opportunity right here that we missed, and then the next opportunity was the down close below the trend line. We actually got in down here instead of up here. We got in down here, and once it moved down. It didn't put in a lower low in here. We moved our stop to break even. It took us out at break even, turned around, went up. There was an opportunity to get long right in here. If you go back and look at this, it's the same exact rules over and over and over again. Okay. Finally, over here, we got long on this up close right here. On the up close, I think everything was still blue on the up close, or it might have actually turned red, but I didn't notice it. The up close right here, off the BBC, same rules, it just stopped out on me, okay? It just turned around and stopped me out. And that happens. Okay. I'll be quick, Mike. I just saw you comment in there. I'll be quick. So we had right in here an opportunity to short. We didn't take it. We missed it, and then it got into the break period here. Okay, so we ended down 8 ticks on crude this morning. All right. Right now, as this is developing, there it looks like it's probably creating a long opportunity in there right now. All right, I'm going to move the crude over, and we'll jump on gold. We were plus 8 ticks on the gold this morning. Let's slide this all the way back here. All right, now our first trade on gold was right here. We took a break even on it because the green line was so close to the cycle, I was really fast with my risk on that. As soon as we started moving, I figured if we were going to keep going, we weren't going to turn back. And it turned back just a little bit. It took me out of break even. I jumped in it again when we had more divergence over here, right here. Okay, and I took 8 ticks profit on that. That was at 946 as well. Okay, so at that point right there, we were up 8 ticks on gold. And we could have taken the 2 points at that point, but we waited a few more minutes and we took it on the NQ. Did you hear me say that? We took it on the NQ. That's, again, 3 days in a row now. Green on the NQ. Anyway, it moved up here, and it moved pretty strong up here, too. There was some good opportunity in here to take some profits right in there. Could have gotten long right in there. You could have gotten long right in here. You could have gotten long. I mean, that right there, people, is an easy $300 a contract right there. And that was about 7 or 8 minutes of the morning. I missed all those trades because I was trading other things or answering questions or emails or something. But right there, that's an easy $300 a contract right there. Okay. It turned around. There was an opportunity to short it right in here. And let's see. Over here, an opportunity to get long. This one only gave 5 or 6 ticks before it turned around. Then the thing just tanked. These arrows are, you know, because I resized the charts, these arrows are in the wrong place. So I can just get rid of the arrows. But over here, a test to the BBC with a down close was an opportunity to get short for about 5 or 6 ticks. Over here right now, we have bullish divergence, a test to the BBC with an up close. So right here on this up close, you could have gotten long from 80.8 up to 81.5 for 8 ticks. Is that right? 7 ticks. Anyway. All right. That is it on the gold. Okay. We ended the gold up 8 ticks. We're going to look at the NQ now. On the NQ, was the one that put us at the 2-point mark this morning, right here. Okay, the very first trade on the NQ was right here. All right, a close above the trend line and up it went. Over here, there was another one, a close above the trend line and up it went. All right, we got long on this one and we took 1 point. It kept moving up in here, but the cycle was moving down. It was sort of resetting and topping out. All right, then on the way down, right here, on the down close below the trend line, you know, this is all the same stuff. You look for the bearish cross, the pull away, the test of the BBC with the down close. All right, before it tested the BBC, right here, we had an opportunity to short below the trend line, on the continuation trend below the trend line. All right, now we could have shorted again right here if we drew another trend line on the thing. It tested the BBC and it gave the down close, but there was blue on the cycle, so you want to get a confirmation of the continuation of the trend, which is a close below the trend line. Right there would have been the spot to short again on the way down. And that was also a close below the MA1, which is an awesome opportunity. Okay. There are just more opportunities all the way down here. There were more opportunities over and over and over again. And then it turned around and it started to go up. And there were all these opportunities on the way up. All right. And that was all this morning on the NQ. Now, there was some great trading opportunities there on the NQ this morning. I unfortunately missed a whole bunch of them because I was doing other stuff. Let's see. Over here, now we have on the ES, there were a couple of opportunities this morning also. There's some pre-market ones that the partners wanted me to go over, so I did. There was one right here, a short down to the weekly trading zone. Over here, a short out of the weekly trading zone. And over here, this was actually during the market. This down close right here was an opportunity to get short. And that went for about 1.5 points. Turned around, went up, and there's nothing in here right now on the ES. We didn't really pay attention to the 6J or the natural gas this morning. There wasn't much to do over there on those. The soybeans, we didn't pay much attention to that either. Okay, There were a couple opportunities here on the soybeans. You can see I drew in some trend lines, but they were all after the fact, those trend lines. I didn't draw them in while they were actually happening. We missed everything that was over there on the soybeans this morning. All right. I know Mike Reed's going to come on and talk to everyone, so I'm going to wrap it up right here. What I want to say is if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sorry, I read a text at the same time. Again, I'll say that www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. In the free trial, you get 5 days in our live trading room. You get access to the charting platform and all the indicators. You get access to Dwayne and I. We'll answer your questions, your emails, your phone calls, all that sort of stuff for 5 business days. Okay? If you have taken the free trial or if you're in the free trial, you should have an email telling you how to become a partner so that you can get the indicators for your for a lifetime or for as long as you have DT Pro. You will have the indicators and all upgrades. It's in your email. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. If you have any questions about it, give me a call. My phone number's in the email too. All right, and that's my cell phone, so you'll be calling me directly. All right, everyone. With that, I'm going to wrap up. We are. What did I say? On my little spreadsheet, we are now plus $3,787.50 in the month of January. We only have 1 day left, and hopefully, I'm going to make it over $4,000 tomorrow. But we'll see. No, 37.87.50 is not too bad, not too shabby. That's per contract, excluding commissions. All right, that's it, guys. Going to wrap up the recording here, and we will see you, well, tomorrow, I guess.
All righty. All right, let's all right. See. Mike,
recording is wrapped.
Mike had an issue with his link, but I think you found it.
Dwayne, I made it.
Yeah, made it. How you doing,
hey,
Mike?
Dwayne. He's in.
How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. How are you doing?
Good, man.
Good. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good.
So, Fed coming up today, they're talking about the all-time highs. We're just so many points off the peak and all of that kind of stuff, the 07 peak.
Yeah.
What do you think? You think we're going to see it?
I think, if we're going to do it, probably... We'll have to do it by Friday. The end of the month, the seasonal upside bias, and if that doesn't kick in, then we may have already seen our high. But so will we see? We might see 14,000 on the Dow. What they're talking about, but that's probably. Would be about the kiss of death. It's mostly retail buying all the way up and institutions standing aside with the very low volume numbers and stuff. And I think this is about run its course. Just up and up and up. We had 8 days in a row on the upside,
mm-hmm.
1 day pullback and then, up and away again until this morning's double top. And so we're still kind of in a range. There's a mini breakout above 48 yesterday, 1598, and
1498.
Going back on, 1498. I think going back under that area would turn it back down again. I'm sorry, Dwayne. I always have trouble hearing you for some reason.
I didn't say anything,
again.
Mike. I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay.
It might have been an echo, Mike.
Okay. So, we have like, you know, let's see what happens into, Friday's employment numbers and that might, if we don't have a high end, or something on the Fed release cause a spike higher, then it could last into Friday, but I don't think there's too much time left before or too much upside for that matter. I think the risk on new longs up here, not real good. There could be one more run up, but that would be like, I think the way this is acting, that'd be like has to be the end of it. That's just what things are looking like. In fact, all the way up, my internal gauge is not even close to getting into an overbought situation, which just kind of tells me that, underneath the surface, things aren't as good as they appear to be. So.
Well, the fact that this thing could not take out this high right here, double top you just talked about, and we've now spent 1, 2, 3, 4, this is our fifth hour being trapped here at this weekly trading zone, and just when you think it's going to, you know, break loose, and I just suggested that we might see the market, you know, either go sideways or just, you know, drift higher into the Fed announcement, because it looked like that's what it was going to do. Just like here, when this candle was just a big red angry candle, it looked like we were ready to fall off the edge of the earth, and then it turned right around and ran up to 1503.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, all right, it still got a little gusto, and then look where we are. Just... yeah. Strat on the line. Roll
back down again. Yeah. You know, that's, yesterday after, the early up and downs, and once they got above 1498, they went up there a couple of times, and then they just kind of flatlined. And then once 1498 was taken out, it was like a transition to the upside, and, so, you know, it was a trend up move from there, and that was like early in the day. So after a trend move, you oftentimes get this back and forth consolidation or two-sided action, and also it being a Fed day. Sometimes Fed days, can be a trending move into the release, doesn't happen real often, but when you do get those kind of moves, they tend to be good reversal type of moves, but not going to be the case today.
Well, there's murmurings that in the language that accompanies the Fed announcement today that there will be some hints that we may be looking at a interest rate hike in the sooner than we were originally led to believe, and if that's mm-hmm. the case, that could be all it takes to put a dent in this rally, the rally that just won't give up.
Yeah,
this is where we, you know, gapped open at the beginning of the new year, and that's yeah. This is a daily chart right here.
Yeah,
run steadily higher.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. Well, we had a poor consumer confidence number yesterday, and they rallied in spite of it. And this morning, GDP, they spiked lower on that. Was that not as good as expected?
I'm not sure,
Mike. I think they shook that off, too.
Bag, actually.
Say, Michael?
It was a mixed bag this morning. The GDP, the advanced GDP quarter over quarter was worse than expected. The non-farm employment change was better than expected. The GDP price index was worse than expected.
Okay.
So it was sort of mixed bag this morning.
Okay.
So talk to us a little bit here, Mike.
Instead of a wall of worry, it's a wall of what? Me worry?
Yeah.
Well, Mad Magazine. Alfred E. Newman.
The interesting thing, or not so much interesting, it's actually rather routine now, is that every single one of those was revised in the prior month. So I, you know, what difference does it make what it says?
Yeah,
just
exactly.
Revise it next report.
Yeah.
So Mike, talk to us a little bit about premium and fair value. Help us get an understanding of what those are and why they're important and how they compare to how they're different today than they used to be.
So where to start, huh? Okay, for premium, let's start with the premium first. That's the premium is simply put the difference between the S&P Cash Index, which is the SPX, mm-hmm. On most quote systems, and the futures contract. So right now we have about a 5-point discount trading below cash, which is kind of
the cash
odd
at
because
1504.80 right now.
Right, 1504.80 futures at 1500. Mm-hmm. So they're 4.80 points below the cash index. That's right around what is fair value for today. We'll get to that in a minute. But so that's the difference between the two. There's a calculation for it. And Duane, I believe you put a link to all that info on the web. But
I did, yes.
Mm-hmm. It used to be a premium. Okay, thanks. That was nice of you. It used to be called a premium because the futures always used to trade above the cash index. And that's because of the makeup or the formula, and it involves three things. The interest rates, time to expiration, and dividend payouts. So when interest rates were, you know, above on a 30-year yield, I think above 5-6% still, then the futures are still trading at a premium to the cash index. But when interest rates really, you know, took a nosedive to, you know, rates like they had in Japan years ago, almost down to zero, that really turned the thing around. So now we're trading way below the cash index. So that is in the formula for the premium. So years ago, we would be trading at maybe a 4 or 5 point premium or higher with higher interest rates. But with almost zero cost of carry for a 3-month period of time, only dividends are paid out. So that's taken out off the dividend payout, basically taken away from the spot cash index, gives you the futures price, the futures premium. Okay, I don't know if that makes sense or not, Duane, but
mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the premium. Fair value is one with all the calculations. So I'm sorry, but the premium is just the difference between the two. Fair value is the calculations that make up the difference between the two. Okay, so when the futures normally trade around fair value, but when there is when they get too much above what fair value is, then that tends to above fair value. There's arbitrage, and that's where they will sell the more expensive futures and buy the cheaper stocks, and that would cause what was called buy programs in the old days. If the fair value was well below, if the futures were trading well below fair value by a few points, that was enough for arbitrage on selling stocks, buy the cheaper futures, and collect the difference between the two. And that was basically what fair value was used for. So, you know, while we've been talking, fair value, the premium has been roughly between 4.50 and 5.50 points. Fair value for today is about 5 points, so it's been about 0.5 point above fair value and about 0.5 point below fair value, so not really enough of a spread for there to be a buy or sell program. So that's what fair value is used for. another thing that you might hear in the morning that the futures are up or down so many points. Mm-hmm. Well, that really is only meaningful to where they had closed the day, closed the previous day. Had they closed well above the 5-point fair value and closed like, say they closed at 1505 with the cash at 1505, they would be five points above fair value on the close. So you might hear, S&Ps are down 5 points pre-open. Well, all that really means is that they're back to fair value in alignment with the cash index. And instead of seeing, if they would have held that level for 1505.50, you'd expect to see stocks being bought on the open, the more expensive futures being sold. So that would have been an arbitrage on the buy side. But Ed, you heard that the futures were down 5 points. You might think, oh no, this is a big down move. But really, they're just back to what's called fair value and right back in alignment with the, where they should be trading normally. So, two different things, but they're tied together. And, I think that's about the best I can do with explaining them, Dwayne. They can get a lot from the website that, that's posted on there. But, in a nutshell, that's basically it. That's why the futures and the cash index will come together,
as we get closer to expiration of the contract, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because the dividends will have been paid out, you know, except for maybe something on the last few days. There might be one or two left, stocks left with a dividend. Interest rate, cost of carry would be down to zero. So that's when they come together. And on the, it used to be, triple witching Friday. And the futures settlement, it was wild because they didn't have a split open like they do now. On Fridays, and I don't remember exactly how it's done, but the cash and the futures are settled at a certain time, I believe. Not end of day, but in the old days, it would be the cash index and the futures both settled. The settlement at the end of the day was where so-called delivery was taken, and not split on a Friday. It was the very last prices on Friday. So there was really some wild moves that would occur. And so it was, you know, look out. This is a triple witching Friday. And, you know, a lot of those days I would just avoid because, you know, it would be crazy and anything could happen. Anything can happen, but it was just, you know, pretty hard to read and stuff. So oftentimes just avoided triple witching days. Now, like I said, they split that up and it's not, the volatility has been kind of wrung out of the market because of the way that things have changed over the years.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time to explain that to us. I know David would like to say good morning to you, so if you can stand by for just a second,
sure.
I'm going to bring him and Robin on. I know she wants to say hi as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
great.
All right, guys. Don't touch your radio dial. We'll be right back. Joining the conversation will be Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com and Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach. Don't go away.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Thank you. Good morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
And thank
I
you very much.
I remembered that Robin told me she would not be here today after I gave her the big introduction. So we'll just...
Oh, that's fine.
I thought it was Thursday she was going to be here, but I guess it was Wednesday. So anyway, good morning.
Good morning. It's a beautiful day in Las Vegas. All right. So now we've got Robin out of the way.
Very nice.
Good morning, Mike Reed, and good morning, Michael Bork.
That sounded too good, David.
Yeah, that was, well, that you know, was good. I was practicing all morning just in case she couldn't make it.
Okay. All right. You're off the hook.
Thank you. I was listening to your update on the markets and the cash and futures thing, and it is interesting that we are trading at below, you know, the cash market, if I got you correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been trading below the cash market. Dwayne and myself and Michael had a conversation a few days ago about the position of the market and that we maintain. It's interesting that we have maintained an extremely bullish posture trend-wise in the market. The VIX is very low. Many indicators have failed in terms of saying it's time to sell, and they continue to fail. I believe they will continue to fail until we get up to the 15-15 and or higher, when the market will, I think, at that point be closer to actually being in a position. You know, the two big levels for us above us are 15-15 and then 15-38 to 15-40. And putting the minor stuff aside, those are the two main very important levels. And so anyway, my point was is that, look at, here's the market. It's super, super bullish. It keeps going higher. It's frustrating people. And yet, all the while, futures are still trading below cash. Cash is trading at a premium to futures. I think a lot of people who, I don't know about a lot, but they might intuitively say, well, that seems like if the market's really strong, futures would be trading at a premium to the cash market. And so what would you say to that outlook, or how would you address that?
If that were the case, then we would just be having one big major move higher if they were persistently above or at the cash index because of the buy programs, arbitrage that would be going on.
Okay.
Where they should be trading roughly 5 points below the cash index. Anything above that, if they were to go rise up to meet 1506 we're at here, that would be, they would sell the more expensive futures and buy the cheaper cash index. I'm sorry. If they were go up to meet that, they would sell the more expensive, sell the futures, buy the stocks.
Okay.
So it would drive prices higher and buy programs. That would be, you know, the SOS traded equivalent. I can't think of the name of it now. I got different names for these guys. But, high frequency. I mean, that would be manna from heaven. They wouldn't be looking at penny spreads. They would be having bigger spreads because that would be well above fair value and just be a powerhouse on the upside. So,
Well, that's interesting.
Now, if that were the case, like 2 days before expiration, and they were a couple points above the cash, that would still be really, you know, bullish and kind of push them higher.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, good.
But, yeah. They switched over. It used to be premium, and then they went, you know, when the interest rate plunge occurred, that changed the formula. So instead of always trading above cash, which was normal, they gently creeped down to trading about even and then below. And now instead of having PREM on our screen, we should have a DIS K or a discount, whatever, because that's the way it's constructed mathematically. That's just where they should be trading at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, good. And your outlook now, or do you? I'm sorry, I might have missed if you said anything, but maybe.
I think that your 15-15 level, You know, I think that could probably coincide with the 14,000 level on the Dow, if it does,
mm-hmm.
that everyone's talking about, and they get the party hats on and all that stuff. Also, the Dow wouldn't be too far from its all-time high, if I'm correct. The Dow entered, or the S&P cash intraday high, 1552 and change. So, I would think that would be like a blow off type top and would be probably looking for, shorting opportunities or something that to set up, because I think we'd be closer to the end of something than the beginning of something. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Well, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. I'm glad you're up and around also. You sound pretty good. And it's nice to see that. So,
yeah, thanks, dude.
Well, I hope you continue to feel better.
Yeah.
I feel somewhat better. Actually, I didn't sleep that well last night. You know, you have those nights where you wake up in the middle of the night. You might have been dreaming something weird or whatever, and then that interrupts your perfectly good sleep. And I know this is probably a tired old subject, but or I don't know if it's tired, but I've noticed, I really have, as I got older, the dramatic difference in the kind of bed that you have. If it's a bed that you're really comfortable with, it makes a big difference. If the pillows are really comfortable, it makes a big difference. And the quality of your sleep is a really big thing. They're finding out more and more that people who don't get enough sleep chronically build up what they call a sleep deficit. Even though you can get up and move and feel good pretty much throughout the day, you start building up a sleep deficit. And depending on your body type and so on, your body, it can actually cause all kinds of problems, even with your arteries, believe it or not, just not getting enough sleep. So for those of you who are, you know, the type that don't get a lot of sleep, maybe you ought to consider getting a better or can't sleep well. Take some time and energy and check out what you're sleeping on and maybe experiment around a little bit if you can, because it does make a big difference. So, and in spite of that, you can still have a bad night anytime. But if I sound like I'm in a fog or something today, you can just say, well, William's had a, you know, kind of a rough night. So I'll still try to give good information about the markets out.
Well, thanks. We appreciate that. Mike, I know you got to run, so I'll go
anyway,
ahead. I'll cut you loose. And
there you are.
Let you
anything
go.
Else, Michael? Or?
Well, I hope that pillow works better for you than I did.
I'll let you know.
Okay.
Let me go pick up some new pillows.
No. Mike, thanks so much.
I need to slip out here.
Yeah. Guys, go
visit
Mike.
Well, nice to chat with you, Mike.
TradeStalker.com.
Nice to
chat with you, too, and say hello to Robin.
All right.
I will.
And Bert and Michael, Dwayne, thanks for having me on.
All right. Mike. Take care, Mike.
We'll see you soon, man.
I'll see you guys. If not later this week, I'll see you next week.
Okay. Sounds good.
Have a good day.
See you soon. Okay. See you, Mike.
Take care.
Bye now.
Well, Dwayne, we have a Fed announcement today.
We do.
The market's quiet now, but we're anticipating that. Is this a 1:15 Chicago time Fed interest rate announcement? Today?
2:15
yes,
Eastern. It
is.
That is correct.
Okay. So, you know, the interest rates have been low for a long time. The bond market, we're forecasting and have been forecasting a February bottom for the bond market. So we've been expecting lower prices into February as a monthly bottom. And that means that from that point, we would expect a very important advance. And I'm telling you how that advance plays out is going to speak, I think, a lot about the potential for the bond market to stay high and interest rates stay low. So, you know, February is only one day away here, so we're very, very close to 2 days away. To having that bottom put in, but we may also have a roadmap for the bond market as well, and we'll see. But, you know, we've had Rob Howe on the program, and, you know, he helps people with the homes and with short sales and with,
yesterday,
you know, getting that information. Yeah, yesterday. And I was really happy, I just want to say this for the record, I was really happy to hear people asking questions about their situations, and I hope you take advantage and call him and let him be of some help to you, because he does know the subject thoroughly. And you know, it, at this point, with interest rates and everything else, you know, maybe you can do something to take advantage of these low interest rates before the blue moon goes away. And I hope that's the case. So, anyway, so Duane, anything else you want to cover before we get into taking a look around here?
Well, REM is, they're really pinning their future on this new BlackBerry they unveiled
today. I see that.
Today.
I see
they're
that.
Changing the name of their company from REM to BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
And changing their stock symbol, of course, to go along with the new name. The stock doubled over the last couple months into this announcement. And then today, the last time I checked, it was down about 4% on the day. Now, the symbol change has not taken effect as of yet, so it's still trading under the symbol of REM. But there it is today. We hit it, you know, just a couple days ago. We're sitting up here at $18. Yeah, this has been the rally up into, I mean, we were at $8 back in November.
Mm-hmm.
Made it up to $18. Okay, so the stock more than doubled. This was probably, I'm not sure what that was. But anyway, here we are today. We're down, you know, one, two, three, four days. You know, I was going to talk about the buy the rumor, sell the fact thing, but they didn't even wait for the fact on this one. I mean, today was the fact. But this thing started to sell off 3 days ago, 4 days ago.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
18, and so we hit a low today. I mean, we're off the low at the moment, but not by much.
Mm-hmm.
So now, have you ever been a BlackBerry user, David?
You know, I've never been a BlackBerry user. It's nothing against BlackBerry. I just never ended up with one. And I started out with the big brick phone that you see in that movie Wall Street,
right,
like everybody did. Who made those brick phones? Remember the big clunky?
I think there was a couple. There were a couple of different manufacturers. I think Motorola might have been the first one.
Maybe, yeah, that's what it was. You're right, Motorola. I started out with that, and then I think I went through a few small little toy phones after that. And you know, I just happen to enjoy the Apple product, and I think you know, you have to give credit to the operating system that Android came out with, the fact that it's usable with all these different phones. I'm sure I could use that as well, but there's an extra level of exquisiteness that Apple has up till now baked into their product, and that came from Steve Jobs wanting perfection, and people appreciate that, what he had done, and I hope to see more of that in their product. Just the usability of it, the smoothness of the screens, the way gradients and things change, just the pinch of the screen to small and shrink it and get it back up, all those things, they really, really worked those out and got them at a pristine level without having to go through many, many iterations of the phone and finally getting those down like other companies have. I mean, Apple is the leader in that, and we've talked about Apple, and we know that they're putting in a larger quarterly bottom in their stock. I'm hoping that they have the leadership and vision, especially to continue not just to compete in the market they've created, but to continue to innovate in the market and come up with at least one or two more products that the world doesn't know they need but will want once they see it, because they really did that. And interesting, I think the iPad is one of the most amazing examples of a product that had failed essentially in the marketplace when made by other makers. There were already, they weren't called iPads, but they were either called tablets or something else, halfway between phones and computers. And those products weren't doing well, and only did that market explode when Apple came out with their iPad. So they actually ended up taking a product that was already failing in the market, and through innovation, they could see that product doing well. I mean, he had like four or five hits in a row, which has to be practically unprecedented in modern history for somebody to come up with that. I mean, it would be an amazing thing for any of us to come up with something that everyone would agree that they need and actually be able to deliver that product to them. To come up with one of those, most people could hang their hat on that for the rest of their lives. you know, they came up with four or five in a row that did that. So it's a remarkable story, remarkable history, and I wish Apple the best. I think there's going to be some great trading in Apple after this quarterly bottom gets put in as well, and we'll talk about that, of course, and I'd like to, as we get closer, you know, later in the year, that kind of volatility that we've seen on the downside is going to produce a sizable reaction. So keep your eye on Apple, you know, for everyone. So anyway, so that's it. And Dwayne, if you want, is there anything else in news that you want to cover? Or
no. Well, it was kind of interesting that January saw the largest sales volume in gold and silver coins from the U.S. Mint in history. Because metal prices have been a little down here the last few months. I mean, gold certainly well off its highs. So I don't know what the coin collector, and these coins aren't ones with numismatic value. These are just ones that are freshly, you know, minted by mm-hmm. the U.S. Mint. So they mm-hmm. don't have any of that additional historical value or rarity. They're just freshly minted. But they sold more this month than ever in history. So that's interesting that, you know.
That is.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, I didn't see – there's not much else. Zimbabwe's broke. They have $217 in the bank. now, that's – their finance minister, he went public with that. They paid the workers, and they've got – that's what they got. And their inflation rate got to – for people who think, you know, inflation can't spin out of control, in Zimbabwe, this isn't history like the Weimar Republic. This is happening right now. It just happened.
Mm-hmm.
231 million%. That's their inflation rate. It's up 231 million%.
I don't even know what to say to that.
You know, they don't even use their own currency anymore. Now they're using the U.S. dollar and the South African rand to do business because they're the other news, Amazon, and this is interesting. I already talked about it, but Amazon missed their earnings, and the stock soars to an all-time high. Apple beat their earnings and sold off. So something mm-hmm. about the shine has really, you know, left the Apple here. At least for
well, a lot of people thought they wouldn't beat their earnings, and that was some anticipation, I suppose, in the decline.
After they announced their earnings and they beat them, it continued mm-hmm. to sell off. You would think mm-hmm. that would reverse it
right.
and, you know, run it up. And when Amazon misses, how does it go to an all-time high? I don't know, but it did.
It's just the weirdness of the stock market and psychology and people. I mean, look at our market. We've advanced in the S&P and Dow and NASDAQ and other markets since the 2009 bottom. All we've done is advance in the face of ever-increasing bad news. That's all that's happened. We've had nothing but increasing bad news financially, terrorist, you know, the country's financial health, so on, you know, split, divided country, all the things you can bring up, and the stock market, and they call that climbing a wall of worry. But that's a very common thing that it goes, it's not intuitive. The market seems, you know, has a very non-intuitive kind of component to it that throws people off, because that's one of the tricky things about trading with news, and there's nothing wrong with thinking and working with news. I know people that do it and do it very well. But it takes a special kind of person to take what appears to be good news and somehow know that that good news means lower prices, or take bad news and know that that means higher prices. So, you know, we've just in the last 5 weeks have had a tremendous advance in the S&P, all the way down from 1383 up to 1506 in just 5 weeks. And I challenge you to tell me what the good news is that would have sent the S&P up over 100 S&P points. You know, what is
it?
It goes up on bad news. That's what it's doing. It
now
goes
they're starting
higher
the countdown
bad.
To the 07 peak, the all-time high. The Dow needs to go climb 207 points to hit the 07 peak. The S&P, they'll flash the number up here in a minute. But anyway, so yeah, that's the talk is that, so I, that talk, I think of that as a bit dangerous when they start talking about how close that is, when everybody's focused on the fact that, you know, it's going there. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I mean, this thing, here it is on the daily chart. I mean, after we gapped open the first of the year, this was the first trading day of 2013. There it goes. Boom.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Well, let's take a look. Let's talk about the S&P just a little bit more. Again, we don't have much to change in our overall outlook. We're still looking for the market to continue higher. Like I mentioned to Mike, I think that the indications that are given by the indicators on the longer-term chart are are going to continue to be giving out incorrect indications with regard to the short side of the market until after we reach the 1515 or higher levels. So there's quite a bit still left in the market. There's a lot of energy that occurs in markets when they do approach new highs. You were just mentioning the idea that it's kind of dangerous when markets get close. Well, I don't know exactly what you meant by that, but the danger
by
is
what?
That – I'm sorry?
You don't know what I meant by what?
The danger. I mean, I agree with you, but I'm not sure how you meant it.
Oh, it's when everybody becomes focused on something happening and it's going to happen with great certainty, the market has a tendency to, you know, do the other thing.
Yeah. I was going to say that the danger is actually in completing those targets because there is a buy the rumor, sell the fact
yeah.
kind of mentality that the market wants to go up. It wants to test those old highs. It wants to try to get there. And once it does get there, the danger is that it did get there. That's the danger. And that the relief, so to speak, that comes from that.
Yeah, then it becomes the now what factor. Okay,
yeah.
So we did it, now what?
And so, yeah, that's the danger that I would infer from that. And I was thinking maybe you were thinking that way, but there's many different ways to think of it. But our outlook, you know, we've never really put it out as a direct forecast, but our outlook since August of last year has been that the market would continue finally up into the 1515 or higher level prior to the ending of the longer-term advance that began in 2009. And so really we want to continue to buy pullbacks. These are very low volatility conditions we're seeing, but we want to continue to buy pullbacks on the way up to higher prices. And so that's our outlook right now. With regard to today, we have a very small range day. For those of you who utilize reflected wave, you know about this morning's bottom. They got down to 1498, which is a support level in the support and resistance panel. That tied in with the reflected wave bottom that they gave. Gave a very, very nice buy signal for this very small, you know, advance that we have. I mean, this might have been a 2-point trade by the time you got in it. Up to current levels. So there's not a lot of, you know, powerful movement here, but I like the idea, and we are still in our bigger picture, which is for these higher prices to continue to come, and the fact that we've diversified ourselves in the stock market itself, we have hundreds of, I don't know the exact number, but we have an awful lot of options that we've sold. So we have our money where our mouth is with regard to the idea that we do have higher prices coming, and when we do get up there, then everyone is going to sense the danger. The volatility will pick up, and you know it'll be very interesting times at that point to see what can be done with the market at those levels. I believe once we get up there between those two levels that we talked about, or higher, the 1515, 1538 to 40, those levels will be the next tumbler for us in the turning of the combination, so to speak, to use that analogy, for the final top to be put in and then a more important sizable decline to occur. And I do think there will be important news that will be related to it. One of the things that you could think about, I mean, if a person wanted to, they could say, well, gosh, if I was going to look for news, I'd look for bad news, right? I'd look for bad news up at the top, because it's a top, and bad news would make the market go down, and maybe it will. But I wouldn't be surprised to see the market go up and have some good news come out and put the top in on good news.
Well, we're in a situation, too, right here now, where good news, such as, you know, some jobs get created or the unemployment rate shrinks. And so the Fed has to go, okay, so now we got to raise interest rates. So we have the good news leading to the bad news. So you could see the market sell off on the good news that, you know, unemployment has dropped when, in fact, it's making the move on what will have to be done to, you know, keep us from having 217 million percent inflation, hyperinflation. So,
all right. Well, right now, that's our outlook on the S&P. And if you'd like, Dwayne, we'll switch over and we'll take a quick look around at some of the other.
Sure. Where you want to go?
Well, let's take a look at the gold market. This has been a really interesting market. On the radio here, we talked over the last couple of days about the bottom that we were forecasting for January 29th, which did come one trading day early for a multi-day advance in gold. Our target, our original initial upside target has already been reached at 1671, and the market has moved higher. We're trading at 1678 right now. So this has been a real nice multi-day trade. This is a very ordinary reflected wave type of setup. But inside or larger than just the daily is the bigger picture, which is, I think, more important, that there is, and I've mentioned this many times on the program, we're expecting the month of January to be a very important bottom in gold, possibly either the most or one of the most important bottoms for the year. So keep that in mind. We do have a roadmap for those of you who want to take advantage of this, at least utilizing a roadmap. We're going to have one in gold in very early February here. So that'll give you a nice idea of how to trade this and how long to hold it and so on to take advantage of the bigger picture, you know, for those of you that are interested. And I do want to remind people that the bigger picture does require the bigger margin requirements. And Bert Schlichter from Daniels Trading, who works with us on the radio program here, works with Dwayne and so on, can give you not only give you the margin requirements, but he can also manage the account for you if you can't be in front of your screen and so on. Is Bert around today, or is he out there?
He's around. I think he's on the phone. Bert, if you're out there, pop in, please.
Okay. So if he does come in, we'll chat with him at the time. But anyway, so the advance off this bottom is a real nice, fast move that, you know, roughly speaking, from 1657 up to 1680, where we are right now, nice movement. And we think that, you know, closing the market, as we've talked about this a number of times, above 1680 or right in that area is going to be the more bullish position for the January bottom in gold. There's a lot more I could say, but we're going to save it for the roadmap, which will come out right away as soon as we get into February, and that's Friday. So please come over if you want to sign up for either a month of Messenger Pro or you take a free trial, check out, and see if the roadmaps can be of use to you. We have certainly used them to great effect in our own trading, and you can find out for yourself if it fits your style by taking a few of them and seeing if that's something that you can utilize, you know, believe in and utilize and so on. Okay, so let's move on. We talked about the U.S. Treasury bond market. Normally, we would have expected a multi-day bounce off of a similar bottom on the 29th or 30th for this market. Now, today's the 30th, but there's even a bigger picture for this. The U.S. Treasury bond market, we think, needs to go down into February for a February bottom. So that's what we're going to wait on rather than worry too much about the bounce. And we do have the 1:15 Chicago time Fed interest rate announcement today. That's going to be big. How they handle that and what they're going to say. I mean, what is the street saying? Are they they're not going to raise interest rates?
No, I don't think anyone suspects that.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny, we want interest rates to be low, and it's nice to have them low, but part of the growth of the economy would probably require somewhat higher interest rates. And that's why I always, I'm anxious to get everybody to take advantage of these low interest rates, at least for now. So at least, you know, they get some piece of the goodness of this, because I don't think we're going to see this condition in our lifetime again, depending on your age. If you're 5 years old and listening to CFRN, you know, you might see something like this again. you have a lot of five-year-olds out there. I know that.
We do.
No. Okay, another market that we're very happy about because we've had a roadmap on it is the euro. Several days ago, we had the euro long position from 133.68 or higher for long entry, any hourly close above 133.68 for long entry, and so on. And the real purpose of this trade isn't to be in just for the run to 134.19. That certainly got completed. It's to be in because there's a wild card aspect to the euro, meaning that the euro, if it closes the month above 135.23, 135.25, right in that area, that's a much, and I expect that it will, that's a much stronger position, and there's a real possibility that we're going to see continued higher prices in all the way to the end of the first quarter. So that's big. And that's why we wanted to be in, is because there's a real possibility that could happen. Now, if it had closed the month below 135.23.25, we would want to take our remaining long positions off. But this is an example, for those of you who follow this trade or are trading this trade, this is an example where we know there's what the normal thing is, and then we call the unnormal thing the wild card. And in this particular case, they have shown by their action today that it's very likely that the wild card is going to be the thing that goes on here. In other words, that they're going to go higher substantially. So we're going to continue to hold our remaining aggressive, smallest part of our position, which means that if we were trading with 10 contracts, let's just say, I'm not saying that we were, but let's just say we were trading with 10 contracts, we might only be holding two to hold this aggressive, because we're trading to normal targets, because that's what works 90, you know, the highest percentage of the time, whatever it is. Then these aggressive, this wild card kind of situation comes up, and you end up holding your aggressive position. But that's usually, or in our opinion, should be your smallest position. Person could say, well, you know, hey, if I was holding my the biggest part of my position, I'd make a whole lot more money. Yeah, you would. But if you had done that every single time in the past, you would have lost a lot of money. You know, you can't just take the one scenario and say, if I would have done this one time, I would have done better. You're not going to be just be trading once. You're going to be trading thousands of times. And what you have to have is a strategy that makes your trades thousands of times work out in your favor. And that means taking reasonable profits at reasonable targets. And if there's a wild card scenario, holding your smallest position for that. And, you know, if it gets up to the numbers that we're going to put out in the roadmap in very early February for the euro, we have a continued sort of a continuation roadmap that's going to go out. That number is going to surprise you where they're going. It's enough to make two contracts, you know, pretty darn nice, if you know what I mean. So today the euro is trading at 135.75, so we're well above the 135.23 to 25 level, and we'll continue to watch this market as we get into February. But again, this is a roadmap one. If you want to check these out, come to pagetrader.com. You can sign up either for a free trial or take a month or a quarter and put these trades to work, because right now we have both the euro and crude underway. We have an upcoming gold, an upcoming T-bond, and some other possibilities coming up here. And so I get really excited about them because these are trades that we can really work with and don't have to get in perfectly. Even though sometimes you can, you don't have to, because there's plenty of room in most cases to get in later. Okay, with regard to crude, we just put out some more information about our crude roadmap. Just to reiterate this, this is the same roadmap we've been talking about for a while, that we had it bottoming in early to mid-December from and a move up from approximately 85 up to 95 to 96. The market has gotten as high as 98.24, And we haven't issued the next entry yet for this trade. In other words, we're waiting until February, meaning a day and a half from now, to put that out. So if you want to take advantage of the next portion of this move, that would be a nice time for you to perhaps take a trial as well, or just take a subscription and follow this trade through to completion. The market has done some tricky stuff, which is good, because that's what we want to see. That's how markets often act prior to the larger move beginning. So keep that in mind, and we'll talk about this as it continues. But this is a roadmap, so we don't have more to say about it right now. But there are some really important critical things I think you would want to know before taking a trade in crude with regard to the roadmap. And then Tesla has had a nice, decent week up. Last couple of weeks, they've had a good move up, and they've come pretty close to challenging their all-time high. Tesla's the electric car maker. And for those of you that are interested, Tesla is in business, so to speak, with Toyota and with Mercedes. They both have investments that both those companies have made in Tesla. Tesla itself owns over 150 patents on different technology that they've put together. That's a pretty big thing when you think about it. That's intellectual property that's very valuable. But what I was going to mention is that this is just a little aside outside of the markets, but for those of you who might like an SUV that would be an all-electric SUV and want to drive around, Tesla got together with Toyota, and they took, this was almost like a fun little thing they did. This was kind of almost like the honeymoon, the results of the honeymoon between Tesla and, it's between Elon Musk and the chairman, CEO of Toyota. They got together and over lunch came up with this plan, and they're making 2,600 of these SUVs, which are based upon the RAV4, the Toyota RAV4. You've seen it before. It's kind of a nice looking, not particularly, overly attractive or anything, but what Tesla and Toyota did is they took out all of the powertrain and they replaced it completely, believe it or not, with all Tesla components. So you have the big Tesla battery pack at the base of the car, so there's no interior space encroached upon by having this battery. It's a 41 kilowatt battery. That means the car can drive 130 miles on a charge. It's a lot of driving. You're not going to run out of steam with something like that. It also has a 10 kilowatt charger, which is three times the size of most chargers, which means that it can fill that battery up 120 miles worth in 5 hours, which is really, really fast for 120 miles plus driving. They've smoothed out the body so it has the lowest drag coefficient of any vehicle that is a SUV. And many, many other features. And it has a complete Tesla powertrain. In fact, if you like the Model S from Tesla, the really pretty Model S, the Toyota RAV4 has the Model S battery pack, plus it has the Model S motor in it. You're driving an SUV with a Model S motor and battery pack in it. It's just been detuned, and the vehicle will do 0 to 60 in 8.5 seconds in its normal mode, and in its sport mode, it'll do it in 7 flat. 7 flat for a big SUV will surprise a lot of people at the stoplight, because you'll get across that thing real quick if that kind of thing's important to you. And I think it is.
It's a nice looking
car. So check. Yeah, it's not bad. Do you have it on the screen there? I was looking at my chart here. Yeah, it's a nice looking vehicle. This is the RAV4 EV, and it's all electric. You don't go to gas stations no mo. Okay? You ain't pulling in. You ain't doing nothing with gas. You fill this thing up at your home. Oh, there is a little issue about price. This is the new RAV4. That RAV4 right there is not the EV, though. That's the newest RAV4. They redesigned the body. You have to put in Toyota RAV4 EV, and it'll show you the EV version. That's actually the new 2013, which you're looking at there with the engine. Anyway, the one thing is, it does have a high price. It's a $49,000 car, but I do want to remind you, and then we'll get on back to the markets, Toyota is giving you a $5,000 discount now to help move them. There's only 2,600 of them made. You also get a $7,500 federal tax credit. That means if you owe $10,000 at the end of the year, you now owe $2,500. So you get $7,500 back, not from the government literally in the form of a check. It's money you just don't end up giving to the government. So, and then, so you got 5,000. Yeah, there you go. There you go. And you can see the front end's designed a little differently. Still a nice looking. So you have 5,000 plus you have 7,500. And if you're a previous Toyota owner, Toyota will give you an extra 2,500. So there's actually $15,000 in discounts. That brings you down to about $35,000, $36,000 for an all-electric, uncompromised, fully gasoline-free, emissions-free vehicle that'll go 0 to 60 in 7 seconds and looks to all the world, except for the EV stickers and badges on it, like an ordinary Toyota. And you can kick butt on those guys in the little Porsche Boxsters and stuff right out of the hole, because it has 273 foot-pounds of torque, and it all hits at once. How are you doing?
It's okay. Glorified.
Pretty nice, huh?
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah, so that's the new thing. There's only 2,600 of them. They are selling about 50 of them a month. They would like to see a little bit more of that. If I needed a big SUV, and if that was my thing, I really like that car, and it's a really interesting thing because it's a one-time. It, again, it's the result of a honeymoon between Elon Musk and the CEO of Toyota. They put this thing together in about 2 years, and it's got all the nice features. There's nothing compromised in it at all. It just gives you that. So check that out. Go, Google the Toyota RAV4 EV, and you can read up on it. Maybe that's something that some of you would like. Okay, we'll move on from there. I had to get a little electric car stuff in there, Dwayne. I can't go too long without talking about it.
Everybody's fidgeting about the natural gas. You got anything on natural gas?
I do, and as a matter of fact, because my charts are in a certain order, we'll get to it in a few seconds here.
Okay.
To our institutional clients, yesterday we gave out in the U.S. dollar that we believed that, although the decline was underway, we believed that the U.S. dollar would decline substantially further today, which it has. And it would reach, I think, 79.42 or so. I don't have the number right in front of me, and lower. And today the dollar has had a really good move down. So that's a good example of the dollar catching up with the euro. Don't get caught into that thing that, when two markets are counter to each other, that if the euro goes up for 2 days, the dollar immediately should go down 2 days right away. It doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes the cycle requires the dollar to wait a little bit, and then finally it puts it in. And that's exactly what we had here, because back on the 28th, the euro was already rallying, and the dollar was just sitting quietly. So what that told me was the dollar is really either really, really strong, and it's about to really go much higher, which is very unlikely, or its cycle needs to wait a little bit, and if they break it down, they're going to go sharply down to, get this, catch up with the euro. See? So that was a very easy trade for us to put out last night to the institutional, because they needed a whole lot of catching up, and yesterday's close showed us that the move was underway. I mean, it really was a no-brainer. I can tell you right now, all that was simply what I just laid out for you. It was just that simple. But some people, it's good to just tell them, and they, if they hear it, it makes sense to them. They may have even had that same thought in their own mind, but just hearing somebody else say it can make a difference. So anyway, so the dollar is catching up with the euro. Just be careful if you're doing the, hey, the bonds are up, the S&P should be down thing. Make sure you understand that it doesn't always happen the same day, that there can be a catch-up, and I like to look for that. And we had a great example of that. This is this is from having watched markets for 23 years. You don't see it every day, but when it does happen, it can turn into a very good trade. I just gave you, everybody listening, a really, really good piece of information, whether you recognize it or not, that you can use to back up an existing trade or to create a trade from this idea. Again, the idea that you're looking for it when two markets that are linked to not work like they're supposed to, and then you're looking for the break of one of those to start the catch up, and then there's plenty of room left, and that's what got us to go short the dollar last night. So anyway, if there's any questions about any of this, you're more than welcome to ask, but write that down, put that in your little things to experiment with and toy with that sound so frivolous, things to study and look at with regard to trading these markets, because it can, the few times here and there that that happens, it's especially true in markets that aren't quite as linked, like the dollar is linked very powerfully to the euro, but the bond S&P thing is not quite as tight of a link. And so you'll see those things happen in that, where you get the catch-up effect and so on. So that's a trading system, right? Or trading, yeah, that's a trading methodology or a system that you could actually use to put together a pretty nice little thing there. So keep that in mind. Okay, so we'll move on from the dollar. We look at and talk about cocoa sometimes, but we're not doing anything with cocoa right now, except putting it in our chocolate milk. Let's see. Oh, you know, we didn't call this on in terms of a trade, but remember we talked about copper needing to touch the $364.85 level in the week of January 28th, and that was potentially going to be a bottom. It was. Copper's up big time. We didn't trade it because there just wasn't enough confirmation at that level. It all happened so quickly, so we just weren't able to put it together, but it's nice to see the indication play out. Let's see. Okay, so natural gas. let's take a minute and go back on natural gas. We originally talked about on the radio program the 21st of January as a reflected wave top. For those of you who have reflected wave, it'll be very easy for you to know about that top for a multi-day decline. But we talked about at that time that because we have a larger indication, looking for the market to decline into February, down to at or near $2.98, that top made on January 21st would be a really good place to potentially go short, because that bottom could be the exact thing they're going to go run and do. And guess what? That's exactly what they've done. Now, the lowest low that we got to was $3.23. That's still above $2.98. But the run, obviously, has a big part of the run has happened. And we still believe and are looking forward to the bottom that would normally be due in the month of February. And we're only a day and a half away from February. So they're bouncing today off of, you know, obviously quite a bit of movement on the downside here. But our overall view until February, I don't have any more commentary on this market until we get into February, which is a day and a half from now. And I think that probably covers everything that we're seeing. Oh, by the way, I did see a TV commercial for Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. This is a company that we've been watching their stock for a while, and I saw that on TV the other day. So they're doing good. And then soda today, not a lot going on there. They had a little spike up. And I think that's everything we have, Dwayne, for people, unless they have a question about something in particular that we haven't looked at.
Well, there was a question about natural gas, but that's it. That's all you got. I thought there was something big going on there because everybody was asking about natural gas.
The big thing was the continued decline off of the 21st top for the test or attempt at 298 into February. That's the only forecast we have for natural gas right now.
Are you in the H contract?
I'm sorry?
Are you in March?
Yeah, we are in March for natural gas. One other thing we gave out the other day, and I think we mentioned it on the radio, but you'll have to correct me if we didn't, buying soybeans above $14.52 for an advance above $14.60 into today, January 30th. This was a trade that we gave out to the institutional people as well. Those that are in it have a pretty nice run underway here from roughly speaking, just call it 1460, worst case, we're trading up 1478. So we have, you know, in trading terms, we've got about 16 to 18 cent gain in this, and the market did exactly what we thought, that they would break out above that. If they could close above 1452, then we would break out above 1460 on January 30th. And that's exactly what they did. So this is a nice example of soybeans following, the internal principles of markets as we see them. And we're going to continue with this long position. We'll comment on it. We haven't done soybeans in quite some time, but I think you're going to see some more action in soybeans from us. So And that's it. If I'm missing something on natural gas, please remind me, because we talk, you know, there's a number of things that we do throughout the day and talk, and maybe I'm forgetting something. But the bigger picture for the natural gas was the decline from the January 21st top, for them to test or attempt $2.98 into February. And
yeah,
so unless there's...
I don't see any other comments, so I guess that's...
Okay.
Kevin wanted to know if you have any thoughts regarding Facebook, which I haven't looked at in a while, and I haven't...
We haven't. I think you may have some... Or do you have any thoughts on it, Dwayne?
No, there hasn't been any substantial news. They're trying to get online retail going, like a shopping mall, but it's not catching on.
Oh, they already have the mall up and running?
No, they're trying to get... they want people, the people who come to Facebook to, you know, chat over the back fence and share pictures and videos and whatnot. They're trying to get them to buy stuff while they're at the site.
I gotcha.
In other words, not just click on an ad and go somewhere else to buy a product, but they're trying to, you know, create their own online retail space, just like you go to Amazon.com to buy stuff and you go to different websites to buy things. That Facebook wants to become a shopping destination, but their efforts so far have not translated into much. That's about the only news I've really seen on them here in the past
week. I will throw this in and take this with a grain of salt a little bit, because I don't follow Facebook a lot, and it is, if you are following something, you watch it every day, it's just like you start to get a feel or kind of just some insight into it. But having said that, I would want to see, I think the weaker close for this month, because we're right here, the month is closing, the weaker close for the month of January is, for me, definitely going to be below $31.30. And we're at $31.18 now. So it doesn't mean that if they close below it that it's absolutely reversing. But it would have me tightening up if I was a person that had been long, which I don't know anybody that is, but you know, if you certainly are a person that had been long in this, I would use some caution. There's a difference between saying this is the beginning of a potential weakness and therefore I move my stops up, and saying I'm just out, obviously. You know, I don't want you to take your long positions off if you happen to be long, but I do think moving stops up and shortening the distance that the market can come down, if we had a January close below 31.30, would probably be a good idea. I mean, just based on just glancing at this. They haven't done anything really wrong yet, but I do think that that's something that I would keep an eye on. The trend is still up, and I think it's fair to say that Facebook probably surprised a lot of people with this sudden surprise, you know, move onto the upside here. Maybe not a surprise for people who were following it, but they had a nice move up, and they're trading near some important level. So
yeah,
if you want
to
ask this again.
To the almost trading at the IPO price.
The IPO opening price.
It was like 34 and change, I think it was.
Okay. At least on the weekly chart, and I could go back to the daily, it looks like they opened on the day, you know, of the, you know, May 18th was the date. They opened up at 42.05. They made a high of 45, and then they closed that same day at 38.23. So that was the beginning. That single day was the beginning.
That's right.
Of,
the 38 price, that's one I was thinking of.
Yeah. And they closed that day at 38. And so today, you know, the highest they've made just recently, still pretty good. 32.50. They've come back pretty good. That has to be.
Yeah.
And see, here's the, I just want to say this real quick. For people who were holding on to losing positions all through that decline, which is idiotic to do. But if they're doing that and saying to themselves, well, I'm going to hold until a break even, or I'm going to whatever, what happens is invariably is the market will start to rally up and they start saying, well, you know, maybe that's all they're going to go, and maybe I shouldn't hold for a break even. Maybe I should get some out here. And before you know it, you end up getting out in many cases where you should have gotten out in the first place and taken a loss or worse. you end up not even holding for the break even, because if your psychology is hacked up enough that you can't say, well, this is the area that I'm wrong and take your loss, you're probably under the same kind of psychology that won't allow you to hold on to a nice rally that gets you back to an actual break even. It's funny that the people that want to hold for break evens often don't have the psychology, because they're dealing from a kind of a damaged viewpoint of I'm never wrong, I don't take losses, I'm just going to wait for them to come back. I think there's whatever the thing is, you know, we've been through over this so many times. But consider if you're in that position, and I'm speaking to you lovingly, you know, not in a mean way, but if you consider this, that you probably are not often capable of holding for the break even, because as they start approaching and moving higher and you're holding on to that now smaller and smaller loss, you get more and more tempted to take your position off. And the same way that we all have to grow through the thing about holding on to profits properly and all that. And that was a big thing for me, that I had to struggle with that as well as struggle with losses. I had to do a lot of struggling, and I think everybody, most people do, with the markets. But that's one reason I'm just basically saying in a nutshell, don't be a person that's holding on to the losing position all the way down and then saying, well, I'll get out at a break even, because you end up seeing that it's difficult to now hold, now that you've been, you know, traumatized by the decline, it's very difficult to hold while the thing is making its climb, because you're worried that they're going to come take it back. And it's just, the psychology just ends up leaving you just a basket case. By the way, there's a really, really great bad movie from a long time ago, like in the early 80s, called Basket Case. If you want to have a nice time sometime,
not familiar with that
go
one.
Find Basket Case.
I'm not familiar with that one. Hey,
no, very question, few people would be.
Question here about the Australian dollar, U.S. dollar Forex pair. I know we don't look at currency pairs very often, but repeated request. Do you see anything here? This is a daily chart I've got up.
And he's talking about the pair here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a way of addressing that just right now. I could, however, and I think we did talk a little bit. Let me go check this out. We have talked about the Australian dollar. Somebody had asked about it. We had put it up. And to be honest with you, originally we were looking for the Aussie dollar to go down to test or attempt 101.63 to either be there or to start a move to that level from December of 2012. And we're now ending January 2013, and the market's trading at 103.83. Now, I don't have any other outlook. This is just the dollar itself, I believe. This is the Australian dollar. So I don't have a lot to add to that, except that if you wanted to, you could take, as an example, any weekly close below 103.40 as an important early sign for further decline, and that further decline would be tied in with the idea that they're just running late for the 101.61 level that we talked about, and perhaps that'd be something that you could put to use. But I wouldn't short it until we see, I wouldn't want to just jump in it here until we see weekly closes below the 103.40 level. I think that would be at least a start on the downside here. I haven't put all my stuff together on this market except to say that, you know, that would be something that I would consider right here. And I'm sorry I don't have more than that for you right now, but that is at least something that you could start with. I don't know if you know how to connect that dollar number, the Aussie dollar, with the U.S. dollar and put all that together. Maybe I can get a chart up and we can work with the pair and come up with something. I wouldn't mind doing that. There's somebody that's interested. So
okay.
I'll get it up. Yeah, I'll definitely take a look.
Jerry had an interesting comment. He says, I recently read something that stated that 2012 was one of only 8 years where the S&P never traded negative on the year at any point in the year.
Oh, that's an interesting statistic.
Yeah, does anyone have any insight on this point? And if true, it would be even more rare to have 2 years back-to-back where that occurred. Just curious. So,
yeah, I actually have never even considered that statistic, the idea that it's never traded negative on its own year.
Well, it's done it. 2012 was the eighth time in history that it's done that.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
The eighth year, yeah.
That's new to me. So that, and it's an interesting stat. It's an interesting idea that within the own, its own year, it hasn't traded negative on it and continues to move higher. So, and we certainly, we've seen that, you know, and I, like I've said so many times, I think we're going to see more before this thing's over on the upside. So I think that's it, Dwayne. We're just going to wait here very quietly for the Fed interest rate announcement today.
And yeah, that's coming up in what?
About an
hour.
Let's
see. It's, well, let's see. It's.
Is that right?
Well, it's almost noon here, so that makes it 2 on the East Coast.
Yeah,
so,
that's about right.
So, no, 15 minutes.
Oh, is that right?
Well, 25.
Maybe I've.
Be about 1:15
Chicago. 1:15
Chicago
time.
Oh my goodness!
Uh oh!
Oh my word! There's been a Bert Schlichter sighting.
Yeah, it's been one of those days where a lot of things have gone bad.
Oh,
platform issues and stuff, but
so. You're right up there with Sasquatch and Bigfoot, and I mean, the
yeah.
sightings these days are just like so rare, so far and few between. Goodness
right.
gracious, how you been?
I've been good.
Yeah?
It's,
busy?
Like I said, I've been dealing with some kind of screwball stuff.
Yeah.
Just to get my head above water. You know, we had some platform issues, so.
Right.
Just been dealing with those a little bit, so.
Yeah, that never makes your day easy, does it?
Yeah, I love coming into the fire.
So the guys you're hanging out with there, the broker types, what do they think about this Fed announcement today? Any murmurs as to if we're going to hear some language about maybe the interest rate going up? Or?
I think it's divided. I don't think anybody. I think what the guys are really talking about is a non-event type of deal. There's some little. Some guys' opinions that they might be a little bit hawkish this time because the Fed has, you know, kind of hinted that we might be into that cycle. But for the most part, I think we're looking at it to be more or less a non-event. So how do you trade that? That's the million-dollar question. I'd say you don't. Just be a spectator. Usually the initial move is the wrong move. Keep that in mind. Just let it play out. Let everyone try to figure it out on their own, and then after a while, it'll start taking its true form. So just be a spectator.
Would
be my opinion.
Yeah. All right. Well, 25 minutes, we'll have some idea of what they're thinking about doing. Remember, they promised us low interest rates to 2015, and then they said maybe 2014, and then
right.
you know, they've said we're going to tie it to unemployment, and we know that those unemployment now are they going to tie it to the unemployment numbers or the revised unemployment numbers? that's the thing.
And the revision of that.
Yeah,
and then that
stand by for us to revise that. So, David, did you go to the speech yesterday there in Las Vegas about the immigration reform?
Yeah, which I would really love to, Dwayne. I love, you know, watching our president talk about stuff like that.
Right.
I just couldn't make it over there. So, yeah.
Have you read or have you heard? I haven't even heard or read a transcript of the speech. Did he say anything we haven't heard before? Was there anything new?
Well, you know, honestly, no. I haven't read anything about it. I'm purposely trying to avoid. Mixing myself up a little bit too much in anything that he's doing right now because it all ends up being, for me, just more of the same. We're going to spend more, we're going to go deeper into debt, and we're going to give more entitlements to people. That's what we're going to do. That's how his whole agenda somehow boils down to that in one way or another. But so, yeah, I've kind of left him alone a little bit. You know, he wants... I guess he wants everyone to, you know, okay, you got me started. In New York, they want to take all the guns, or already have taken all the guns, or have made it illegal to carry guns or want to. That's they're trying to pass a law.
Oh, so now it's safe to go to New York.
Yeah, it'll finally be safe to go to New York because no one will be able to stand up and shoot you. And that's good.
Fair enough.
Even though they have the toughest gun laws in the world in Chicago, Illinois, and that has the highest murder rate of any city and so on. But, you know, they're working at getting those. And it is interesting that, you know, the very people that talk so strongly about how guns are so, A, dangerous, and B, how they really won't help you, you know, it's not, they're not keeping you safe. Those are the people that always have the armed guards around them. Those are the movie stars, and they have guns. And I don't know why they don't see the hypocrisy of fighting for, this is, you know, it's the far left. They never see hypocrisy in their own position. They don't have any problem promoting everyone else to not be able to defend themselves or their families. But when they show up somewhere, they've got goons all around them with guns. It works for them, but it's not something that we should be doing. I don't know. You know, the hypocrisy is just, you know, it's knee deep. So anyway, New York has something going on with that. And then New York also wanted to have, I think it was New York, wanted to have a law. They tried to get a law passed that if you went to get a job and weren't given the job, that you now have the right to sue the employer for not hiring you.
Hmm.
So, see, that's what happens when you've drank the Kool-Aid. That's what happens. You now have rights and no responsibilities. And you can now sue everybody when they say, well, no, thank you for coming by today. We're going to, you know, continue to look and we're going to hire somebody else for this position. Now you get sued for that as an employer. Just for not being hired. I don't think it went through, but the fact that they tried to do that, you know, I'd rather watch a really scary movie.
This is a really scary movie.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, so that's about all. So, no, I didn't listen to Barack Obama's speech on immigration, but it is a very serious and even in some ways very interesting problem. We have 11 million, 12 million illegal aliens in the country. You're not going to send them all back. Now that they've let it go this far, they have to work out something. So I don't know what it is, and we'll see how it all plays out.
Hmm. Yeah, Bruce says Liberals want gun control to save lives. That means they are pro-life. So why are they against? So why would they not also be against abortion?
Right. I mean, you can go. You know, Bruce, you can take this and you can string it on all the way from here to San Bernardino. The string of, you know, strange positions that they take that are counter to other positions that seem totally contradictory. The list just goes on and on and on. And at some point, you just say, listen. You know, get me some oatmeal. I don't know why you would say that, but at some point you do say that. That's some humor there. That's where people would laugh. And it's not that funny.
I was looking at my cred score. It says I always wanted to be in the 1% of something, but it says that you're in the top 1% of influencers on cred. You probably don't know it. Probably nobody knows what cred is, but anyway.
Good.
But hey. I got a little badge and everything.
Oh.
Digital. Yeah, it's kind of cute. Top 1% influencer. Yeah. For those that don't know, Cred came out after the other site. Oh, goodness. Now, what was their names? They sent me free business cards because they said I had good mojo over on their site. Gosh, what is that site that ranks people? I can't think of it now. Do you know?
I can't think of it either.
What is it? I forget. Because I don't ever go there anymore. It was kind of interesting in the beginning. And then they sent me a thing. They said, you get free business cards from Moo.com. They sent me free business cards. I had to pay a little shipping and handling, turns out. But it wasn't much. And they were very nice cards. So I'm out of them. And I'm thinking about it now because I've given them all away. Took me a while, because I don't get out much, but then you know.
You really don't.
I'm trying to think, what is that? Somebody in the chat room, Clout, there we go, thank you very much, Henry. Clout was the original, tells you how important you are. If you're like a big shot on the internet, a lot of people, you know, listen to you and follow you and think about you and tweet you up and all that stuff. So I don't, I have no idea what my, I almost thought this was spam when it came in from Cred. It's being the top 1%. I think that's a gimmick. But I don't know. Maybe they'll give me some free business cards. That'll be cool because I'm out. I need more. And I went to the Moo.com site, kind of a classy, flashy little site. It's a startup. And I didn't realize what a gift I got when I got those free business cards because they're not cheap. And you can get, you know, nice, affordable business cards these days on the internet. My wife, a few years back, she ordered business cards from Vistaprint when we started our wedding chapel. And lo and behold, they called her up or sent her an email or something and said, "You're our 7 millionth customer, blah, blah, blah. Can we use your name and promote you, you know, in our promotions and whatnot?" And she asked me, she goes, is this like just a scheme or whatever? So we investigated, and it's true. She actually was. And they did use her name in their promotion. She was the 7 millionth customer. There was no confetti, no balloons. But she got some free business cards. She got something. Anyway, that was kind of interesting. You know, this day and time,
you're very popular and you're very impressive.
Whenever you hear that you've won, she just won that because she was, you know, if she'd been in the digital line, one person back, somebody else would have got it. But in the digital world these days, when you get any kind of an email or anything that just says you've won something or you're special just because, or you know, it's so hard to take any of it seriously. So.
Well, what I do is I just send them something back, and I just say, "Listen, I already know I'm special, but thank you." Something like that.
Thanks for thinking of me.
Thanks for, yeah. So listen, thank you for having me on today. You know, the S&P is super quiet. Don't have anything further to add, but I do want to say that I appreciate the questions, and we do have a number of roadmaps coming out in February. And we also, for people who have an interest in Reflected Wave, which is our turning point methodology, we have a seminar coming up in March 16th and 17th out here in beautiful Las Vegas. And I promise it won't be too bad temperature-wise if you want to come out during that time. But we have that coming up, and we have a webinar for the Reflected Wave seminar tomorrow, 15 minutes after the market, the S&P closes. You can come to our website, go to pagetrader.com, click on the link for Trader's Blog, and that'll get you into the webinar. All of the turning points that we've called on this radio station forecast, they're not me. They're simply Reflected Wave. Anybody with Reflected Wave can make these same kinds of calls for tops and bottoms, the top in the natural gas on the 21st, the bottom in gold a couple days ago. Look at that move up. That type of setup. And you don't have to give up your other trading methodologies. You can tie this in with any other type of work and simply have it fill in blanks that have existed or areas that you of uncertainty by having that turning point there. And again, all we're all trying to do, no matter what the methodology is have a high probability of being correct in a trade and hopefully have a high probability of trading it correctly. You know, the high probability of being right is making the call and saying this is where I think the bottom is. We also want to have a high probability of actually doing the right thing when we're trading. And, you know, trading isn't making one decision right. It's making a whole series of right decisions. Those right decisions are not difficult, but they seem difficult at the time. And one such difficult situation that comes up, obviously, is taking a loss. If the market moves to an area, we've talked about that so many times, people do struggle with that. I have struggled with that. Another situation which people struggle with and I have struggled with is holding on for distant targets. If you have a belief that the market's going to run to a number and getting out too early, you're never going to be successful. This is an absolute. It just works out. It's nothing. There's no opinion in this. You cannot be successful in trading if you're going to let losses run and cut your profits short. It'll never work out for you. And you really should take a look and see if that's not what you're tempted to or already actually doing in many cases. And I do want to say a couple things. People who trade off of a fixed methodology tend to do better than people who shoot from the hip. People who, you know, hey, I got the markets, I know how to do it, you know, put their little gun in their holster. They know markets and they're just going to trade them. And people that do that or come with that kind of, attitude or whatever you want to call it, they tend to have more problems with the this problem of letting their losses run and cutting profits short. So you can't be successful that way, but you can be successful and will be successful by cutting your losses short and letting your profits run. And if you have a reason to take profits at reasonable targets, and then if you have a reason to hold on for a trend following exit or a higher target or something like that. But make some right decisions with trading. Make all your decisions right decisions. It's not that hard. But just like in real life, how it's always hard to do the right thing, you know, your buddy comes over and he asks you for a favor, or you really want to say, you know what, I just don't want to do that, or, you know, they ask you to go to a place, come on, show up at this place with us, you know, and you say yes anyway. The right decisions are hard, but that's what you're getting paid for. So you might start thinking in terms of saying to yourself, the reason you're earning money in the market is because you not only can make a right decision, but you can execute the right decision. Those two things together, you're going to do real good. And the right decisions aren't that difficult to make, but somehow our psychology gets flipped around, and before you know it, we're doing everything exactly so you can never be successful. And that's why I've said so many times on the radio that it's a good idea to think about and look at what you're already doing. You know, put your plans down for the future for a second and look at what you actually are doing with your trading right now, and see if you can't find in that some corrective actions. This has been really big for me. I think it's been everybody who's ever gotten ahead in trading has found that they're doing something wrong. Urges and compulsions and feelings get involved in their trading, and that's why I like a methodology that has some rules to it, rather than the idea of, well, hey, you know, man, I've been around markets, you know, I just trade them, man, you know, hey, man, I just trade them, you know what I'm saying? You know, that guy is not going to do as well as the guy who has some rules and is willing to follow the rules. One of the right decisions you can make is, I'm going to get some rules and follow them. And listen, even rules will get you to have to make a right decision sometimes and get out with a loss. But if your rules are based on a good understanding of what markets are doing, or in our case, reflected wave, or in Dwayne's case, their indicators and all the things that they do and their setups and so on, if you have a good foundation, then stick to some rules. Because I can tell you that as a general idea, the guys that tend to shoot from the hip don't do well over time. The guys that may know a lot about the markets but are following a set of rules that they themselves have worked out or whatever, or maybe somebody else has given them that set of rules, they tend to do better. Stay away from and check it out for yourself if you have friends that do that whole thing. Hey, man, I just traded, man. You know, I know it. That guy doesn't do as well, and don't be that guy. Be willing to follow rules that work and make the right decisions, execute those right decisions. You can do this. This is not something that only a few elite people can do, but you have to make the right decisions, and that's what you're ultimately being paid for. You get paid for making right decisions in the market, and some of those right decisions include taking losses. Don't get stuck and trapped into the thing. If you follow the market and let it lead you, it will lead you into letting big losses occur and having no profits. You know, when you finally get it right, you're out with two ticks or, you know, whatever. You know, you're not letting the market really pay you. And you may find that this is something you're struggling with yourself. I would suggest you could talk to any of us. You could talk to Robin Dane, who's a coach, and she's familiar with big traders that go through this. And I myself, and perhaps Dwayne, we all talk to traders. I have a number of people that I talk to that have been around markets for a very long time. They're very sharp, but once in a while, you know, their personal lives and other things gets them into some creeps into their trading, and they start doing the gun swinging. And as soon as I smell that, you know, I'm saying, hey, you really need to get a number where you're going to be wrong and be wrong at that number. In fact, I don't even mind telling somebody to practice being wrong, because you do actually have to practice being wrong. Not wrong in the sense of letting it run, wrong in the sense of saying, here's where I would be wrong if they get to this number, whether they spike it or they hourly close or 15-minute close above or below it. You go in and you go and take that position off. If I was going to train somebody to trade, I'd first train them to lose, because that's where everybody gets it wrong. It's not the winning ones that make traders crash and burn. It's the losers. That's how traders go away. And they don't know how to hold on to the winning, and they don't know how to stop short their losing position. So you need to be trained in how to lose money in order to do it right, because there is a right way to lose money. There really is. And there's a wrong way to lose money. And if you get hooked on that wrong one, you're going to be stuck in that position. Go ahead, Wayne.
Speaking of losing money, in case you've been wondering what John Corzine has been doing since he blew up MF Global, well, he's regained his footing. He spent the summer on Long Island. He traveled to France around the holidays. He visited Central America for a humanitarian project involving children, setting up what he hopes will become a broader charitable effort. Mr. Corzine, who is 66, also enjoys spending time with his grandchildren and has office space in Midtown Manhattan, where he writes and trades with his own money. Some would argue
we hope it's his money.
That in the most telling indication that Mr. Corzine is taking steps to put that nasty MF Global behind him, he was close to cooperating with Richard Ben Kramer, an author and Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter, on a biography. Mr. Corzine's lawyers were in the final stages of negotiating with Mr. Kramer this month when suddenly the author passed away from some complications of a lung cancer. So, you know, Corzine, I mean, in case you missed it, he spent the summer on Long Island, traveled to France around the holidays, and then visited Central America. He enjoys spending time with his grandchildren, has office space in Midtown Manhattan where he writes and trades with his own money. They actually said that. Well, apparently he's not going to jail or being indicted or anything. He certainly doesn't appear to be worried. Let's see. Jerry did a little research. Now, this thing about the S&P not trading negative for 8 years, here's what Jerry found. Since 1957, the 8 years overall that the S&P never went negative, 1958, 1964, 1976, 2012, that's only 4 years, Jerry. You got four more? Since 57. In 58 it didn't go negative, in 64 it didn't go negative, in 76, and now 2012. And then Mike Reed just sent me an email about, because he heard us talking about that. Another interesting stat, and this is on the Dow. The Dow made a higher high and a higher low for 13 consecutive years, from 1987 to 2000.
Say that again one more time, and then I'll
the Dow
just wanted to hear what
had a record making a higher high and a higher low for 13 consecutive years. From 1987 to 2000. Yeah, you know, when I first read that, I thought it said a higher high and a lower low.
And a higher low. Yeah, lower low, right, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought, but okay. That would have been pretty unbelievable. This is a little more believable. Higher high, higher low. Yeah. Mike.
All right, Dwayne, well, listen. Oh, go ahead.
Different. No, I was just asking him to let me know if he meant something. There was just a shooting in Phoenix, five people. And I don't have any details. I just got a little headline that said, five shot in an office complex in Phoenix. Stand by for details. Talking about guns, you know.
Yeah, there you are. All right, well, Dwayne, listen, like to wish – thank you for whatever questions you asked today. We appreciate the questions, and I hope they're you guys are here tomorrow and for the remainder of the week. There's big volatility coming. There's important moves in the S&P and a number of other markets. And if you have an interest, come to our webinar tomorrow. We'll talk about
Reflective
Wave. Dwayne,
in the
thank you.
Chat room.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I look forward to being here with you tomorrow. Robin Dane, I think, will be here as well.
Yeah.
And I won't have to imitate her in the morning. We'll have the real thing.
Yeah, the real thing.
The real thing.
Okay, Dave.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you.
Okay, guys, that's going to wrap it up for us. 3 minutes to the Fed announcement. And it'll take it a couple minutes to come out on the news wires. And so you'll get an initial statement, and then a half hour to an hour from now, you'll get, you know, some in-depth commentary on what they really said. And then in a couple weeks, we'll get the official release of the notes from the meeting. But the initial gyrations should happen here in a couple minutes, if there's going to be any gyrations. The Fed doesn't really have any bullets left in the gun. We're down to almost zero, somewhere between 0.25%. And so the only surprise would be to the upside, or to the fact that they might be considering to raise interest rates. Japan is a point in case that keeping interest rates artificially low for 13 years does not necessarily fix the economy. It didn't work for them. So... all right, let's see. We're just 2.5 minutes away. Let's hang out and see if we get a report. I'll just stay with you for a minute. Fed decision imminent. Okay. Now, we had this pullback tweet here to 1501. It gave 4.5 points. And at the beginning of the radio show, I said that, you know, I would expect to see us maybe just go sideways or to drift slightly higher into the meeting. At best, I guess we drifted sideways, and we did get back up to a high here of 1503.50, and the zone held us, and the zone's still holding us up. So unless there's something bad in the Fed announcement, and the fact that the markets, you know, there's this group bullishness that wants to go take out the all-time highs. So unless there's something really bad in the Fed announcement, we should at least get an initial move to the upside. Now, Mike Reed has a theory. Once the announcement is made, we'll get a move. It's either whether it's to the upside or the downside. And then there'll be a reaction to that move, which runs the other way. But ultimately, the market will continue in the direction of the initial move. So as the announcement comes out, if we run to the upside, we may see a sell-off and then a continuation of the up move, or vice versa. If we get a sell-off first and then a rally retracement, look for a continuation of the sell-off. He's been using that and trading by that for 27 years now. So my recommendation is that you don't trade the Fed announcement. You watch it, and the earliest I would consider getting in is after it makes its move, its retracement move, and it begins that continuation. But really, Fed funds unchanged, 0 to 25%.
With longer-term inflation expectations continuing to be well-anchored, the committee will continue purchasing additional agency mortgage-backed securities at a pace of $40 billion per month, and longer-term treasury securities at a pace of $45 billion per month. The committee is maintaining its existing policy of reinvesting principal payments from its holdings of agency debt and agency mortgage-backed securities in agency mortgage-backed securities, and of rolling over maturing treasury securities at auction. If the outlook for the labor market does not improve substantially, the committee will continue its purchase of treasury and agency mortgage-backed securities and employ its other policy tools as appropriate until such improvement is achieved in the context of price stability. On the economy, information since the last meeting suggests that growth in economic activity paused in recent months, in large part because of weather-related disruptions and other transitory factors. Employment has continued to expand at a moderate pace,
unemployment rate remains elevated. Household spending and business fixed investment advanced, and the housing sector has shown further improvement. Inflation has been running somewhat below the committee's longer-run objective, apart from temporary variations that largely reflect fluctuations in energy prices. Longer-term inflation expectations have remained stable. The committee expects that with appropriate policy accommodations, economic growth will proceed at a moderate pace, the unemployment rate will gradually decline toward levels the committee judges consistent with its dual mandate. Although strains in global financial markets have eased somewhat, the committee continues to see downside risks to the economic outlook. There was one dissent to today's policy action, voting against the action, Esther George, who was concerned that the continued high level of monetary accommodation increased the risk of future economic and financial imbalances and, over time, could cause an increase in long-term inflation expectations. This is Hampton Pearson reporting live from the Treasury Department.
All right, David Kelly, aside from...
Okay, the Fed says they're going to keep buying. They keep buying those treasuries until things get better. Growth in economic activity has paused in recent months. Household spending, business fixed investment has advanced. Now, for those of you that were trading a couple years ago, you know what a Fed announcement used to look like. Okay? It looked nothing like this. This thing would run up 30, 40 points. Swing wildly back the other way, 20, 25 points, and make another 30-point run, and then a 20-point run, a 10-point run. The fact that they're going to keep buying should be bullish for gold. We don't know. We'll see how that plays out. I don't think there was any concern that they weren't going to keep buying. And in the little commentary they just gave, there was no discussion about raising interest rates. That might come out later in some of the commentary, or when we get the notes release in a couple weeks, there might be some indication then. But as for now, with what was just said, this has got to be the most muted Fed reaction I've ever seen. The low is 1,575, the high, 1,503.25. I'm telling you, the markets really used to go wild. Those of you that have been around know. It's hard to even judge the initial move. I mean, back in the day, it was easy because it would go, you know, it was really obvious. Now, it's not. It's not even making an initial move. It's just grinding back and forth. Okay. Pete says, so now they are printing $85 billion a month. How else can they purchase anything when we're borrowing over $1 trillion a year? You know, Pete, I don't know if they're adding another. I don't think they were adding. I think they just said they were going to keep doing what they were doing. Typed commentary will be out on the internet shortly, and everybody will have a chance to read through that. Jeanette, as far as the Twitter goes, last night was the first time I tweeted anything in a while, so you should have received it if you're already on the list. Email me with your Twitter handle, and I'll check and see if you're on there. If you're talking about an email, I haven't sent an email out, I don't think, since Sunday night. So that might be what happened there. And Kevin, when you said repeat that, please, I guess you're talking about Mike Reed's theory that on a Fed announcement, now this goes back to when the Fed announcement created volatility, that the market would make a big move in one direction, then there would be a retracement move, but ultimately the market would continue. In other words, what he was saying is that the first move would almost always be the direction the market was going to ultimately move in. So you'd get a big up move, you know, then you might come down and take out the lows, but then you go back to the highs and more, or vice versa. Get a sharp move down, retraces back up, and then slams down. So, but we're not getting any of that today. Really quiet. Now, here's the thing. Once the Fed starts raising interest rates, this will be more like the old days. You will see volatility. See, the thing is there's just nothing to surprise anybody with today. There's no bullets left in the interest rate gun. The economy is too fragile to seriously consider raising rates yet. But ultimately, that has to come at some point. And everybody's looking for new all-time highs in the market, or to at least challenge the 07 highs. So, all right, I'll leave this chart up and running. That's going to do it for me. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.